It's that special time of the year. It is time for the Tarlest End Podcast Christmas Special 2016. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlestend.com, and over the next hour or so, we'll be handing out some festive cheer to you via our annual Tarlest End Podcast Awards. Who will take the coveted Hal Robson Canoe Underachiever Award? Who will be named Most Improved Player? What's our golden moment? And who takes our Reading FC Player of the Year 2016? The answer to all of those questions will be answered in the next hour or so. We're coming to you live from the Tarlest End Podcast Studios, because unlike most years, we're not down the Spread Eagle. Unfortunately, the sound issues over previous years just got a little bit too much for us. Last year, we had the Chelsea against Leicester game in the background. In previous years, we've been drowned out by Christmas music. So we had to admit defeat, especially because there was a big Super Sunday game going on between Arsenal and City. So we're recording this in Woodley, back in the Tarlest End Podcast Studios. But while we may not have a festive location, we've got a festive crew with us, starting with a man wearing a very nice festive hat right now, one Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening. We are still in the hotbed of Reading support as well, though, Woodley being very much the centre of Reading support.
Absolutely.
The home of the Tarlest End, of course.
Indeed. And another veteran of our live pub specials. I've disappointed you here by not delivering you a pub here, but it is Mark Mayo. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. I can just about get around not having a pub to celebrate in, so it's nice to be here.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you with us. As I said, lots to get to, including those awards and a couple of championship games as well, including a defeat at Leeds and a win at Blackburn. So let's delve into those in the recap.
View from the Tarlest End. Recapping this week's championship action.
A tale of two games, if ever there were two, starting with a 2-0 defeat at Elland Road on Tuesday night. And then we go to Blackburn. Things all start well, but Reading managed to chuck away a lead twice, only to snatch 3 points right at the very death. Overall, 3 points from those two games. Are you happy, Mark?
Yeah, I think so. Coming into the new calendar year, I think you can't always be expecting to win every single game and take 3 points every single week. And sometimes the defeats can be a little bit of a positive. And the positives coming out of Leeds we'll talk about in a little bit. And there's certainly a lot of positives out of a last-minute win out of Blackburn.
Dave?
Yeah, happy. You could be unbeaten but only get 2 points. So, you know, 3 points, one defeat, one win. Yeah, you can't really grumble too much for a side that's in our position to get that.
No, we're sitting here not just with 3 points, but still third in the league. It all looked a little bit glum, though, after Tuesday night at Leeds. We went there. It's a cliche watch. The tough place to go is Elland Road. And Reading, they held their own, certainly, until they concede what is a really disappointing goal. It sort of just dribbles through everybody. Finds Chris Wood, who knocks it in from short range. And from that point on, it was just a case of Reading dominating possession. They ended up with 77% of the ball. But Leeds end up with the only team to score again. They score in a late goal thanks to a penalty. Chris Gunter, the man to give it away. And so they come away empty-handed. Now, the game itself seemed, well, I've pretty much summed it up there in about 10 seconds. But what happened afterwards is far more interesting. Yap Stam launching a scathing attack on Leeds and their style of play, basically saying that if that's the way you have to play football to get results, I don't want to be a manager. Gary Monk, responding to those comments, the Leeds manager, before his next pre-match conference, said he was embarrassed for Stam for saying things like that, but did go on to quantify that, saying, you know, football's an emotional game, so I can understand it. Where do you two stand on this whole debate? Did Yap Stam cross the mark, cross the line, or was he right?
I think he's perfectly entitled to his opinion. He's perfectly entitled to air that opinion. Having said that, I didn't necessarily agree with him. Based on what I understand, what I've read, I wasn't at Leeds and certainly not paying 36 quid on a Tuesday night. But from what I understand, it was very much a case of, yes, we dominated the ball as we normally do without actually dominating the game, because the majority of possession was in the central third.
Two shots on target for Reading despite that 77% possession, whereas Leeds had four on target with their 23.
I think what Stam might possibly need to learn is that he could potentially have done Gary Monk's team talk for the return journey, for the return game in a few weeks' time, purely because if you're going to go criticising an opposition club's fans and an opposition club's style of play, It tends to rattle people.
Yeah, it doesn't intend to end well, Mark. What did you make of it? Did Stam need to pick his battles a bit more carefully, or was this the right sort of time to make a comment on style of football?
I think you're probably never going to get a bigger contrast of style in between Leeds and their sort of history and Reading and our current direction, as it were. But I think what Stam's trying to do in that sense is he's trying to differentiate himself and put sort of separate Reading out from the pack in that sense and say, this is what we're going to do and this isn't going to change. And it's as much telling the fans of Reading that this is what he's going to stick with and that that's what he believes in, because we have to, obviously a lot of fans at the Medeski Stadium aren't so keen on where things are heading in terms of style, and he has to show that occasionally we aren't going to go get the results, but we're going to stick with it. So yeah, it's an interesting time to have done it, mainly because we are doing quite well still. So even when we're losing, he probably just needs to come out and say, oh no, it's just one of those types of losses that you have every so often, a deflected goal and or deflected cross to a goal and a penalty. So it's one of those that it was an interesting time to say it.
I find it funny though, because I mean, we've been through this cycle a couple of times now in the past decade of Reading managers that come in and play this total football style. And when the results aren't there, Reading fans and opposition managers are quick to point out the flaws in it. We saw it with Brendan Rodgers. We saw it to a large extent with Nigel Adkins' early championship team before he had to be a bit more pragmatic. So, Dave, what is different about this Stam era? Because I never get... I've just said that, you know, you get a few detractors, but I've not sensed the sort of overwhelming, oh, God, get it forward sort of mentality, or we need to change, that maybe we've had in the past.
Results, mainly. The fact that we are third, it shows that at the moment, for over the first 5 months of Stam's reign, it's been working, and that's the fundamental difference. It's something that Brendan Rodgers couldn't actually ever maintain, if he managed to get one, he never got two in a row. In fact, he only won 6 league games, I think it was, in his 20-odd games in charge. Adkins was capable of getting results, but it was so flawed, so loose. And I think we potentially at Leeds, just discussing beforehand, I've picked up the biggest issue with the first goal was the amount of distance there was between the midfield and the back line when that deflected cross came in. And we saw that so often with Adkins, and Adkins' sides were so easily cut through and exposed. You know, you get a defender in a one-on-one situation all the time, or the keeper had to defend or save an unimpeded shot. Happened all the time, so they didn't have that. But Stam's teams, they're set up to be able to defend. Doesn't always work. We do concede a fair number of chances, but we have a superb shot stopper, and I don't think we necessarily had a superbly positional superb shot stopper in Federici when Adkins was in charge.
Yeah,
certainly Brendan Rodgers.
Well, yeah, had Federici as well.
Exactly.
But it's a case of, I mean, you talk about chances coming for opposition teams, and in both games this week, both Blackburn and Leeds have had more opportunities on goal than Reading. But as you mentioned, the keeper's got them out of jail. There was a clearance off the line at Blackburn on Saturday as well. But there is still that, I think, that gap that you talk about between the midfield and defence is there. I remember Will, one of our assistant editors, wrote in the pre-season, he did a great tactical analysis piece, actually pinpointing this, and this was from like the very early friendlies, there was still this gap. It's that midfield that's still not maybe as balanced as we like it to be, Mark. But if we talk about the midfield, we've got to talk about the positives, because Liam Kelly really came of age at Ewood Park on Saturday, putting in a really fine performance and contributing to, you know, to one of the goals. How impressed have you been with him, and is he ready now to start week in, week out, or do you still have to be careful with him?
You still have to be careful with him, mainly because what we saw at Rotherham was a situation where we put him into a game which, I mean, in hindsight is easy to say, but also going into it, we can pretty much know that Rotherham away isn't made for a 5'5" championship debutant. You could say Leeds away isn't as well, but obviously he'd had the experience first, in a sense, to help him along. So we have to be careful with him in the sense that if we keep putting him into these Tuesday night away games and difficult physical sides, it's kind of natural that he'll eventually come up a cropper, as we saw with Aaron Cole a couple of years ago. It's not the best position, it's not the easiest position in that league to get attuned to. So we've got to be careful with him, and moving forward, he's definitely got a place in the team if we can find a way of protecting him.
What's his best position, Dave? Where do you play him?
Somewhere in the midfield.
I like how you've narrowed this one down.
Between
the two white lines.
I think. Why did he play on Saturday? Was he the player that was just behind, or was that
it's sort of in the Danny Williams
right
yeah,
type role, sort of in the middle of the three.
I just as Mark was speaking then, I was thinking that perhaps if Ollie Norwood hadn't been sold to Brighton, then I don't think Liam Kelly would necessarily have been getting a look in this season. He's a similar sort of player, with just less in physical stature. He picks up the ball, he's combative, picks up the ball, likes to spray it around. Sort of neat and tidy. I haven't seen too much in the way of creative ability at this level at the moment, but, you know, Stamps obviously sees him in the all-action midfield role, as it were, so I've got no issues with him there. I'd like to see him just behind the front man, though, and see what he does there, if ever he gets the chance.
Yeah, I mean, that might be where he ends up. Obviously, John Swift, who is narrowing, closing in on that return to fitness as well, he sort of made that position his own. So it'd be difficult to see him getting games, but maybe, I was about to say, if we get a nice cup run, but the chances of having a nice cup run for the rest of the season aren't exactly high, although the EFL Trophy is still in play as well. But if we talk about academy players...
Tuesday night, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah, at St Mary's.
St Mary's. Anyone going?
No.
Well,
unfortunately not. You know, if we make it to Wembley, I might...
Free programme.
Oh, now you mentioned that. Well, thank you.
I think it's for the first 1,500 people who actually buy a ticket or something.
So there'll be 1,000 programmes left over then?
Probably, yeah.
Well, anyway, on the academy front, Liam Kelly we talked about in glowing terms, but it was great to see Dom Samuel, man who's come in for plenty of stick. We've pointed out, not, I don't think, unfairly, his limitations on this show and on the website as well. He's had after that superb sort of debut against Burton and the goal there, he struggled, but he came back against Blackburn, scored that opener. What did you make of his finish? Mark?
Yeah, it was nice. There's always questions about the goalkeeper when it goes in at the near post, but at the end of the day, he's a striker. He's got to stick it in the back of the net, and that is what he's done.
Has that earned him a stay of execution in the team, Dave, or are you still getting Jan in on Boxing Day against Norwich if fit?
Depends if we play. I don't know. It's certainly earned him a stay of execution because it's a tidy goal. You get the shot on target, got a chance.
He also did miss a good chance as well, though.
By all accounts, yes. He didn't have the greatest of games once again, but at the same time, you know, that's two in five now, which isn't that bad a return. You know, extrapolate that across the whole season, you know, you're going to end up...
About 12 odd goals,
something like that. So, yeah, keep him in the side at the very least, because, you know, the only way he's going to develop and learn is to play. And we're a developing side. We're third...
I just don't know that there's a role for him in a team where Jan Kermigan is fit and available and you've got Behrens and McCleary playing well. I think if one of Behrens or McCleary drops off, I think you could possibly play him as a sort of a wide man. But I just don't... I still worry about the ball coming back. And apparently at Leeds, he was very ineffective. And it's just the ball coming back.
But the thing is,
he can't win it in the air still.
With Kermigan, is the fact is that he's 35. So can we play him 90 minutes week in, week out?
Well, he was doing it all right at the start of the season. Obviously, he didn't get injured, but...
Yeah, and then the kind of thing I'm thinking we're developing with Samuel is what we've seen before with Simon Church, is we've got someone who can go on for the first 60 minutes and run around and have a little go and occasionally get a goal, and then Jan Kermigan comes on, like Lafondre kind of did in the 2011-12 sort of season, and then he'd take advantage of that tiresome defence and do his thing a little bit better.
I don't know.
The thing with Samuel... Everybody can see, it's plain as can be, that he is a totally different type of player to Jan Kermigan. Samuel, we saw what Samuel was all about with the goal that he scored on Saturday, with a little bit of space in behind and a little bit of space around in and around the defence. He's moved, McCleary's found the pass and he's put it away. He's not going to get that every single game, and that's possibly and probably why he's struggled so much.
Let's be blunt about this. He's only scored goals against bad teams. Blackburn are not a good team. Burton are not a good team. You're talking about two bottom six sides who are very much going to be in the relegation scrap coming the end of the season. But, I mean, that has a role. I mean, you can only beat what's put in front of you. And obviously, he's got the two goals and they've been key goals as well. But against the better teams, he has looked out of his depth. And I do worry about that. And taking on Norwich, who are a very good team with some very experienced defenders, is he just going to get completely bullied out of the game and be ineffective? And then you're sat there going, well, why didn't Kermigan start?
Well, I'd hope not. I think with Norwich, they're suffering, from, you know, particularly after their first half, watching them on their first half on Saturday. Huddersfield had the measure of them, and it was very, very similar to what I mentioned earlier. There was a huge gaping chasm between their midfield and attack, and they just dropped in, their midfield and defence, sorry, and Huddersfield just dropped in, and that's
so you're saying that, scored the But you're goals. Saying then you'd fancy Samuel to get joy out of that defence, based on what you've seen
but
so
simply
far.
Because of the amount of space there is in and around it. You know, they concede goals, Norwich. How many clean sheets have they kept this season? I know they kept one against Brentford recently, but they've lost, is it six of the last seven? Seven of the last eight? Something like that?
Yeah, they're certainly not in good form, and they are, like, if we're saying the type of goals that Samuel scored so far, the ball has to be put on a plate for him, effectively. It's certainly the Burton goal.
He's not going to create his own strike, goal. That's
Norwich
the thing with him.
Are the type of defence that will allow someone like McCleary or Behrens to put a good ball through.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their results recently, I can see them over my shoulder. I think it's seven defeats in the last
seven
nine.
Seven defeats in nine, yeah. I know they kept two clean sheets in that time against Villa and Brentford.
Both at home. But, and they're away this week.
We've just won away from home and we've not lost it. Well, we've lost once at home all season. So I don't see why we should necessarily change.
Does not look like they've kept an away clean sheet the whole season.
Yeah, I was just thinking, and they haven't won away since the start of October either.
But
it's a dangerous game playing those sort of teams, though.
I just worry, though, that it's one of those scenarios where, okay, he's got the goal, but if you've got a better player, and we've all seen in the previous couple of games how much the team looked better with Kermigan in the side, that you're kind of just sacrificing it on a hunch. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I really hate to be proved wrong, and I'm glad he got the goal, and I want to see him go on. But I've just seen too many downs and negatives to his game to sort of, there's not been enough to convince me personally that this is the guy that you want to start week in, week out. I think it's almost the opposite to what you said, Mark. I would almost go the other way of playing Kermigan for a long time and that tiring out the defence, trying to win some balls in the air, then bring on Samuel with his pace to maybe beat a tiring defence. That'd be how I'd play it. But I'm not a Championship manager and I'm not Yap Stam, and he's done fantastically well, so I'm not going to criticise him too much. His comments on the Blackburn game were interesting. He said it was a fantastic result. We started the game well, earned ourselves time on the ball. Maybe didn't make all the right decisions, but we took the lead with that one goal from Dom. We wanted to keep possession, keep passing it, and go for a second, but instead we got sloppy. Lost the ball a little bit too quickly when we were high up the pitch, and they grew in confidence. They got the ball forward into the box a lot, into their strikers, and with their physique, their head up front, they could be dangerous with the headers they were winning with the runners from midfield. They tried to work with their strong players, getting crossed into the box and winning headers, and they caused us problems. Both their goals were from headers. We're not the type of team who plays that sort of football, but we have to deal with it and defend those situations better. Because in any game, if the opposition get an equaliser, they get momentum, and they did it twice. Stan making a good point there. Two goals conceded from headers. Disappointing. Mm-hmm. We talked about this at the start of the season about Reading's weakness from set pieces, and unfortunately, sort of crept back in again on Saturday. Anything to particularly worry you, though?
It's been the same as it has been certainly last season. We're just not a very tall team. Yeah. Our two centre-backs are probably two of the smallest centre-backs you can find in the league. There's no height from the striker. If Kermigan isn't playing, there's not really much height in the midfield with Kelly. Evans hasn't got much physique. Certainly, Vandenberg.
He works hard on his body, Mark. How dare you? He's always in the gym.
He's got a strappy young body, but there's not much of it. So I think, yeah, Vandenberg and Kermigan are the only two that I could really say outside of the diminutive sort of centre-backs that I'd really say have much physique.
Dave?
Nothing further to add.
Yeah, well, as mentioned, they get the 3-2 win. They are still third in the league. The rest of the pack have made up a bit of ground in recent weeks, but, you know, sitting on Christmas Day, third in the table, can't be bad. It is increasingly looking, though, that top two are just going to run away with it. They just do not seem to be slowing down. And it's just, I think, going to be a case for Reading of just keeping pace with the playoff teams. Even if they just drop out, Dave, I think, over the next couple of weeks, if they drop down to 7th, 8th, it's a case that because they've got those points on the board, it doesn't take that much on the signing front to really shore that up.
We're only, cliche alert, 10 points from safety.
Well, there you go, bonus. Johnny's pre-season relegation bets in tatters. Gamble away.
As I say, genuinely speaking, I think throughout, over the 46-game season, I don't think we are quite there at this moment in time to continue the way we are. I think we will, as I say, January dependent, fall away. But, as I say, the caveat that I hold over that is what happens in January.
Very much agreed. Mark, anything to add before we move on to News Bites?
No, well, I think it kind of it says a lot about the whole conversation we've just had about Samuel Kermigan. It could be rendered completely immaterial if we go and sign a striker, or two strikers even, in January, and that could change the whole balance of the side.
Absolutely. I'm sure we would have been having this conversation about our options of Church, Lafondra and Hunt not so long ago before one Jason Roberts turned up. Anyway, that wraps up the recap. Let's move on. We've got a couple of News Bites, including an outrageous bit of FA Cup pricing.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, some quick News Bites to rattle through, starting, as I just mentioned, with some outrageous ticket pricing news that I just wanted to get your thoughts on, gents. Manchester United setting the prices for Reading's third-round cup tie at Old Trafford, with adult prices ranging from £37 to £45. Now, massive credit, first of all, goes to Reading Football Club, who have offered to subsidise the ticket prices for all members and season and half-season ticket holders, meaning that nobody will pay more than £30. So from that side of things, top marks Reading FC. I don't think either of you two are going to say anything different on that.
No, I can't imagine any more that Reading would have done.
No, yeah. Indeed.
So fantastic gesture.
Kudos to the club, but absolutely disgrace from Manchester United, a club who have no need to charge these prices whatsoever. They had a good chance to get some goodwill with fans, and they just showed what a money-driven, just horribly corporate club they've become.
Yeah, welcome to the world of Malcolm Glazer and his sons.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think unfortunately Malcolm's passed away now.
So, but his sons have just continued the legacy, haven't they? So
It's a business. On a business point of view, like the thing is, they can charge it and they will probably sell out Old Trafford, because any tickets that Reading don't buy, they will be snapped up, because Old Trafford is very rarely empty. There's always a market for it. They are, I think they are officially, is it the best supported club in the world? They're certainly in the top three.
It's them or Real.
Yeah.
Pretty much indistinguishable.
So the tickets are going to go, but Mark, with just the money they make from TV rights alone and hospitality and everything else, they just don't need to do it. And that's what I think what annoys me the most about this.
I know, and there'll be FC United of Manchester fans out there who are just shrugging and saying they've been doing this for years, getting on decades.
I thought you mentioned about the TV rights. I think this is it all right saying it's the 55th FA Cup tie,
I believe,
in a row that United have had
since 2005.
The last one that I think wasn't televised was their 0-0 draw against Exeter City, which you would have thought would have been televised. All right, the replay was, and that's what gets me at the competition, is that they've chosen Man United v Reading, who I think is BT Sport, isn't it? And the BBC have gone down a similar line of
Spurs versus Aston Villa.
Yeah,
the whole game.
The whole magic of the cup up to the third round, and when suddenly it's
money of the cup.
Yeah, and, I get the whole TV ratings argument, but that's, I just don't think that really applies where the FA Cup's concerned, because people want to see an upset. They want, and there are clubs out there that could really do with the money that a televised TV match. Brings, you know, like Stourbridge got through. They could do with the money. They fourth time in 6 years that they've got through to the third round of the FA Cup, and they haven't had a single televised tie.
If I have to make a defence of the TV companies in this one, I will say the Stam factor is a big one. I think if it had been Reading's Brian McDermott's Reading at Man United, I think it might actually not get on. But I think the very fact that it's Yap Stam going back to Old Trafford probably rubber stamped this one. But it's just the whole argument goes, if this was an Exeter going to Old Trafford, you'd almost say, OK, good for them charging £45, because Exeter get, what is it still 50%?
I thought it was about 40.
10% goes into the central price fund.
Yeah, you are right.
And 45% goes
to
the
Exeter
club.
Or a club like that would get 45% of the total gate revenue, and you go, do you know what?
And that was the reason for, I believe, the rule change, was that, you know, the clubs at that level would quite happily go to Man United and accept paying that, because they know that they're going to get 45% of the gate receipts, and it's going to keep them in business for 2 to 3 years.
But Reading, on the other hand, okay, we would like the money, but the very fact that Reading are subsidising the tickets shows that it's not a completely secondary concern, but it's not imperative, especially for that earlier kickoff in a ground that Reading fans have had we've been very fortunate to go to a number of times in recent years. So they just don't need to do it. And it's just, I said, you know, business, they've got shareholders to appease, understand all those arguments, but from the pure football fan point of view, it's just sad. It's just really sad. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, credit to any Reading fan who's going, as I said, and kudos to Reading Football Club themselves for doing it, so that they're sort of helping fans as much as they can. So credit to them for that. Just a couple of transfer rumours as well. Jordan Much, Crystal Palace midfielder, strongly linked. I spoke to Charles on the podcast Extra on Friday. He did suggest this one is a goer. Would you be happy with him?
Has he played this year?
Not a lot. I think he was on the bench at the weekend.
Yeah, see, I'm never a massive fan of taking players that are so far on the fringe of what is effectively a failing team in Crystal Palace. So there's probably just about a place for him. He's a good rotation option in amongst the Williams and the Evans and Swifts of the world. But, I mean, he's played once in the Premier League this season, and we need players to play tomorrow.
Yeah, Dave, what about you? You've seen him a few times.
Yeah, he's not one that captures the imagination, but, you know, if he adds some decent quality into the middle of the park, apparently he's fairly utility player, isn't he? He's not just midfield, he can play anywhere across there and anywhere across the back line, by all accounts. He'll certainly add versatility and cover, which we absolutely require, certainly at the back line. But yeah, it's not one that really sort of captures the imagination too much. But.
No, I think a lot, again, depends on the type of money and how much money we've got to play with. You know, this Chinese takeover goes through, a Reading have got £30 million to play with. Dropping £3-4 million on a Jordan Much doesn't seem too bad a piece of business. But if Reading can only afford one or two players, is he the player that's going to tip them and make them that solid playoff side that might be able to put pressure on Brighton or Newcastle? I don't know. But, you know, there was a reason the club played £6 million for him in the first place. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. And as mentioned, there's other transfer rumours knocking around on Scott Hogan and one Idris Kanu as well from Aldershot. So you can head back over to the Tireless Den to read more on that. And, of course, we will update you should there be any more developments. In terms of developments as well, the takeover, still nothing from what we heard officially last week, or semi-officially from Charles, that they were meeting with the EFL, the pair of Dai Yong and Dai Zhu Li, the Chinese pair heavily linked with the takeover of Reading Football Club. Again, there have been various whispers that it could be done as soon as next week, but at the moment, these are just whispers. We can't confirm nor deny them, so it's just a case of watching this space. But it would be very nice, Dave, to get this all wrapped up ahead of that 1st of January.
It would be very, very nice if their money is real.
Yeah, even more importantly.
Yeah, fictional money isn't as good as real money, is it?
Yeah, I tried to spend Monopoly money once. Didn't go well. Did not go well.
So did Anton.
Yes, very good point. Well, on that note, we shall move on now to the highlight of the Christmas show. It is our Tireless Den Podcast Awards of 2016. So stay tuned after this for that.
The Tireless Den Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, well, we've changed into our tuxedos. The hors d'oeuvres have been served. And we're all sat in some swanky venue sipping sponsored beer. Or in this case, tap water. It is the Tireless Den Podcast Christmas Awards for 2016. This is the fourth time now we have held these awards. Highly prestigious. To date, we have handed out zero awards to players themselves. But, you know, lots of them have not sent in awards acceptance speeches. So there is room for improvement. We're going to start at the top with the Player of the Year Award, gentlemen. Now, the previous winners of this award were Alex McCarthy in 2013, Jordan Obita 2014, and last year's winner was Oliver Norwood. Now, there is only the three of us in the studio today, unlike our usual expanded panel. However, those that cannot be with us today have submitted their ballots over, starting with Bucks Royal, who has nominated Ali Alhabsi for the award. Ollie Allen has nominated Ali Alhabsi. So has Will, and so has Steve, otherwise known as Royal Hoops. Gentlemen, is anyone else other than Ali Alhabsi getting your vote?
No.
I would give an honourable mention to Paul McShane. That's as far as it would go, though.
Yeah, and it's important to note, again, that this is a calendar year award, which perfectly suits Alhabsi, who really came into form from January onwards. And that pretty much carried him to the clubs and the Tireless Den's own 2015-16 Player of the Year award. Very hard to look past him. Dave, does anybody else even get a mention for you?
No, he's simply, if it wasn't for him, we could have been on the receiving end of some quite catastrophic defeats this season, or this last calendar year, shall I say, and we were on the end of plenty of them in the first 5 months of it. So, no, he's the standout player.
Yeah, and I think I can't disagree with anything you've said. Also, I'll say as well, Johnny the man Williams has nominated Ali Alhabsi as well. So that is a clean sweep for Ali Alhabsi. Congratulations, Ali. Well done. Thank you. Right, moving on. Most improved player of 2016. The previous winners of this award, Jordan Obita in 2013, Jake Cooper took it in 2014, and Nick Blackman took the award last year, just days before he jumped ship and moved to Derby. Nominees from the others at the moment, Bucks Royal has gone for Gareth McCleary, so has Ollie Allen, Will has gone for Ali Alhabsi, and Hoops has gone for George Evans, as has Johnny Williams. So, Dave, I'll start with you. Most improved player?
Gareth McCleary. We all know the quality that he had, but he's really, really underperformed this last couple of years. And without his creativity, we've tended to struggle. This season, he's been very much on song. suspension aside for the shenanigans at Barnsley. But no, he's really, really on song. He's one of our most threatening players and consistently is one of the most threatening players. And yeah, he's streets ahead of anybody else, I think,
Mark,
in terms of improvement.
I'm going to have to say Ali Alhabsi, purely for what we've just kind of mentioned, in that he was so quite inconsistent and flapping around and committing errors quite a lot in 2015, that by the time 2016 came around, he made a discernible jump in form and has carried that on through the entire 12 months.
Yeah, I do lean towards Ali Alhabsi, but just on the basis that I like to share the awards around, I think I will go for McCleary, just tipping him over the edge. Because if you remember, even earlier in the season, he was sort of playing right back for Brian McDermott. He really looked to be a spent force. And to come away as he has, and he's now our top goal scorer, it's just fantastic improvement from him. So, yeah, I think my vote goes to Gareth, and that tips him over the edge. So congratulations, GMAC. You are the most improved player. There you go. Thank you.
Fair.
Gareth McCleary cannot be here to accept the award. Anyway, moving on to the big one. The Hal Robson-Kanu Underachiever Award, named after the man that won it for the first 2 years of its existence, Hal Robson-Kanu, who took it in 2013 and 2014. Last year, the winner was Jordan Obita, completing his hat trick from being most improved player to player of the year to underachiever award. So an unfortunate hat trick there for you, Jordan. But who takes it this year? Now, the vote so far, both Bucks and Ollie have gone for Jake Cooper. Will has gone for Sandro Vesa, and Steve Raw Hoops has gone for Jake Cooper as well. As for the man, Johnny Williams, he has gone for Jake Cooper too. So unless there's a phenomenal swing here, I think I know who's winning this. Anyone else apart from Jake Cooper worthy of this award, Dave?
I'll put Jake Cooper.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, I suggested Jake Cooper before the show on our video because I can't really think of anyone more who's gone from being a stalwart, up-and-coming part of the team, dropping down to being a not part of the team.
I think with Cooper, he's got the award for exactly the same reason that Jordan Obita did last year. You look at it, he was most improved player in 2014. He didn't get any nominations, I believe, last year. But he's never really managed to iron out the rawness. He still looks very raw. He still has a mistake in him. And there comes a point where those mistakes start becoming a little bit less forgivable each time.
I think a large part of what happened to Jake Cooper is the whole fact that he didn't play any football before he came into the Reading team. So when teams figured out what his weaknesses are and his technical deficiencies, he had to learn on the job how to improve, and that is so hard to do in a Championship side, especially one that's now playing a new type of football.
And as centre-back as well, it's the hardest thing to learn on the job.
And I watched him play against Plymouth, and he just looked at sea. Just really disappointing. But he's still so young. He just, for me, Dave, he just needs to go away. He needs to go away on loan, and he needs to play 30, 40 games in a row, week in, week out, and get used to football.
I think that's absolutely right. I think the only reason really that he's got the underachiever award, shall I say, is purely on the basis that he showed so much potential and just hasn't progressed in the manner that we would really really hope and expect.
And we named it the Hal Robson-Kanu Award precisely for that, because as we said, for most of the other 100 episodes of this show, Harry Robson Kanu was a player with immense talent. You only had to look at what he did in the summer at the Euros for that. It was the very fact that he didn't deliver for that that got him the award. This isn't the worst player award. It's the underachiever award. So you've got to obviously have set a bar to then not hit a bar, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Although Jake Cooper's good at not hitting the bar. He's not bad in the air. Scores a few goals. So unfortunately, though, Jake, you are the latest winner of this award. I don't think it's right to send some applause or all booing.
Can we edit in like a sort of wah, wah?
Yes, and that will play now. Okay, moving on. Golden moment. Obviously celebrating the golden moment of 2016, the nice feel-good moment. In 2014, this award went to the Academy for their successes that run to winning the Under-21 Premier League Cup and the FA Youth Cup semi-final. Last year, it was the win over Bradford that sent us to Wembley to an FA Cup semi-final. This year, Bucks has nominated Tiger's appearance in the stands in Y26 at the start of the season. Ollie has gone for the naming of the Eamon Dolan stand, a fitting tribute to a great man. Will has gone for the general feel-good factor that Stan's brought back to the club, and Hoops couldn't make his mind up on this one. And as far as Johnny, he's gone for the first moment I saw John Swift. Mark, any golden moment for you?
I suppose the West Brom FA Cup win was quite nice. It's probably the best win we had in the first half of 2016 in terms of joy, because there weren't any others. I quite enjoyed the moment. I think it was Blackburn at home when the ball went into the crowd and the bloke picked it up and ran it back into the stands face planted on his waist.
Was it Preston or Blackburn?
That was Preston. Last day of the season. Blackburn.
There was a dolphin or a shark as well that day.
Oh yeah. See, that was golden moment. It could definitely be the lap of honour that they came out for after the Preston game to about 7 fans, and I think we were 3 of them because we were doing a video.
I think that might come under the comedy moment that in a couple of categories time.
Yeah. See, that when there is no golden moments, you look for the comedy moments and pretend like they're just as good as winning a cup.
Dave, anyone not on that list stick out to you?
Yeah. I mean, Mark mentioned the West Brom FA Cup win, and I think this is an award that should go to an event that occurred on the pitch, and so I've actually specified a moment in that game.
Okay.
Lucas Pearson's clincher in the very last of the dying seconds. It's the only time in the whole of the calendar year where the ground just erupted and went absolutely mental.
Yeah.
To get the quarter final of the FA Cup, thinking that we could potentially be on another little march. It's a shame the way it ended, but yeah, that particular moment, and to actually do it against a good value, solid Premier League side, and comprehensively outplay them in the process. I think Lucas Pearson's win.
I think you've tipped it. I think you've talked me into that, because you're right. As nice as the Stam regime has been. And the name of the Eamon Dolan stand, I think, goes without saying. I think Eamon, a fantastic man and fully deserved that. And what the club did was brilliant. But I think I agree with you in terms of it has to be something that happened on the pitch. And for me, yeah, I'm going to go for that win over West Brom because I'll bow down to your Lucas Pearson winner because, yeah, that is the only time I can really remember the stadium properly bouncing in the whole of 2016, because the wins this season have been nice, but they've not been sort of fist pumping yes type of wins, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and also my mate who's a York City fan came down and watched that as his first game in the Badesky Stadium, and that's certainly been a contrast to how York City's 12 months have gone. So it just reminds us as to what we have.
Bottom of the National League, aren't they?
Bottom of everything they've been in 2016.
oh dear. Right, so are we happy to give it to the West Brom Cup win then?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, okay, well done, West Brom Cup win. So that takes the golden moment. Now, worst moment. Now, Mark's hinted on a couple of them this season, in 2016, sorry. The previous winners of the award, a 6-1 defeat at Birmingham, which I think was the weekend before we recorded.
It was.
That Christmas special, and the Adkins had been sacked that night. And last year's winner was Arsenal's winner at Wembley / Fed's Howler. Nominations this year. Bucks has gone for the Palace Cup defeat. Ollie says the Borough Gate affair, the whole Williams v McShane at Middlesbrough. Will has gone for the handling of Brian McDermott sacking. And Hoops has gone for a much more recent. He's gone for the 5-0 defeat at Craven Cottage of the week. And Johnny's also gone for the Palace game as well. He says the penalty given to Palace. So the Palace game, the favourite at the moment. Is that the worst point of the year?
I think, once again, an event on the pitch has to swing this one. If you're going to have it for one end of the spectrum, you're going to have it for the other. And I've gone for the Mate Vidra miss up at Middlesbrough and the fallout on the back of that between
Boroughgate.
Yeah, not so much but what the reason was given for that, which was the supposed headbutt between McShane and Williams. It was more the comments by an esteemed local radio commentator and the subsequent interview had with Brian McDermott and said commentator. And I think that was looking back on it on hindsight, it was pretty much curtains for McDermott after that, I think.
Unfortunately so. Tim's not got a good record at spelling the end for managers.
Well, he has got a good record. That's the problem.
It's a bad record in terms of the managers.
I think Will's made a good point on the handling of Brian McDermott. I wrote a piece on Tarlast End stating how unhappy I was, not with the fact that McDermott had done too well to be sacked, but it just seemed as if the club was going absolutely nowhere. And it's easy in hindsight to say, oh, well, obviously we're going somewhere, but it genuinely felt like at that time we didn't know who was running the club. We didn't know what sort of policy there was in terms of the academy transfers, the training ground and the stadium. And it felt as if we were just going to go in circles again and again, because we had been in circles for the 2 years preceding that. So I would have to say that at that moment, that was the lowest point of 2016, and therefore that would be my worst moment.
Do you know what? You've talked me into it. Again, it was, for me, it was between basically the whole Middlesbrough affair and Brian sacking. And I've got to go for Brian sacking, because I went to the fans forum with Brian not a couple of weeks before, you know, he had got sacked. And you listen to the way he talked, and he was so, so desperate to do well. Not out of a sense for saving his own skin, but he loved the football club. He had a plan in mind, and you could see that he was just desperately trying to get through the season to start anew. And that was taken away from him. Now, in hindsight, it's a bit like when Brian took over from Brendan Rodgers. In hindsight, you can say, oh, well, it was the right decision, because look at how well Yap's doing. And I'm taking nothing away from Yap, and this has got nothing to do with Yap's appointment. As Will said, it's the handling, and you said, Mark, it's the handling of the way he'd gone and treating someone that had given the club so much of his time and his energy, and just sort of saying, actually, we're going in a different direction. It summed up the whole shambles at the top of the football club, that he was the sacrificial lamb for the whole, no one was really sure of who was running the club. Great on Tiger for taking it by the scruff of the neck and leading it forward. But the fact that it had to come at the expense of a nice, really genuinely lovely guy like Brian McDermott was just sad. I'm saying sad things a lot on this festive show. I'm hoping there's going to be a nice ending, like in A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, it'll be 2017.
I'll be visiting.
We'll have a nice year then. That's
yes.
A nice ending.
So Dave, having heard that, I mean, what do you think? Because I said, I think it's kind of a tie at the moment.
I suppose, you know, when you look at the whole managerial sacking, generally that does, is a result of action on the pitch, isn't it? Of a shenanigans on the pitch. If that's the worst moment of the season, I wouldn't be averse to disputing it.
Okay, I'm going to use my executive privilege and go for the one I voted for. The handling and the handling of Brian McDermott's sacking wins the worst moment of the year. Right, comedy moment. Previous winners: the Burnley pitch invasion of 2014, featuring the people that ran onto the pitch thinking we'd made the playoffs and we hadn't. And then last year, it was Lady Sassima's song. So this year, Bucks has gone for Harold Sakanu being linked with big clubs this summer like Atletico Madrid and then ending up at West Brom. Ollie's gone for Della v Brian. Will has said Reading fans celebrating Harold Sakanu going on July the 1st. And then he goes and scores one of the best goals of Euro 2016. And Hoops couldn't think of one. And as for your man, Johnny Williams, he has gone for the Asamoah Gyan affair. So, comedy moment, Dave.
Comedy moment, bittersweet, being half Welsh and the summer. I couldn't help but laugh when Hal Robson-Cadou scored against Belgium.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with that. That was pure comedy. Mark?
The Asamoah Gyan thing, actually, I hadn't thought of that because it was a sense of, we're going to sign this amazing player, and then I was among those people saying, actually, no, he's not amazing. He's been in a useless league for so many years, and then it turned out that he was stones overweight and weeks away from fitness, which is pretty much, if you had to write a comedy script of a transfer rumour in 2016, that would be it. The Robson-Kanu thing, I'm struggling to differentiate one single moment that was more hilarious than the other one, whether it was the fact that he said he was going to sign for Atletico Madrid, the fact that he was joyous that he'd run down his Reading contract was quite funny in my mind as well, although tragic at the same time, and the goal that he scored, it's one of those moments that I didn't think I had anything to say. I was full of a room of people who were just just watching the game, and everyone jumps up celebrating, and I just sort of am dumbfounded by it, by the slapstick nature of the moment.
Okay, so what was more funny then? The fact that he scored that goal, or the fact that he was talking himself up and then ended up at West Brom?
I think he also talked himself up by saying that he'd been offered £250,000 in China, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
A week in China, should I say. £250,000 a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get that. Watching the game, it was just absolutely incredible. You know, we all know that he knew he had the talent, but to do it against supposedly one of the best teams that the world has got to offer, and not look out of place, you know, with a touch, Cruyff turn, finish, it was just like, yeah. Like I say, being half Welsh and then just holding your head in your hands and just thinking, oh my God, really?
So which is the more funny though? That is the key question.
I think the goal.
The goal.
The goal, yeah. Okay, we're going for the goal. We're going for Hal's goal against Belgium being the funniest moment of the year. So well done, Hal. It's nice to see that you still managed to pick up an award to complete the cycle of life. So congrats, Hal. The Pavel Pogrebniak most missed Reading player award, although Will did point out since when did we miss Pavel Pogrebniak? I can't remember. I know this came up in last year's show, so I'll have to go back and listen. But anyway, it's named after him. And the winner and the inaugural award winner was Adam Federici for last year. This year, Bucks has gone for Tish Boller, as has Hoops. Ollie has gone for Oliver Norwood. Will has said it's not a particular player, but he misses not seeing academy players in the lineup as much. And Johnny Williams has gone for Michael Hector. Dave?
Michael Hector, for me.
Okay.
I just think under Jaap Stam, he would have been quite frankly, streets ahead of where he was when he left us.
Mark?
Tish Boller, but for the same reasons.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go for Tish as well. It's just such a shame after doing such a good job breaking through to see him take the money and go to Villa. Although it has been funny seeing him then struggle at Villa. So maybe comedy moment as well. So Aaron Tish Boller wins on this one. So we miss you, Tish. We do. Please come back soon. And finally, this might as well be called the Tyler Sten Podcast Can't Predict Talent Save Their Lives Award, otherwise known as the Breakout Prediction. Now, to be fair, this is an award where you generally stick your neck out on the line and make bold guesses. And the 2013 award winner was Royston Drenthe. That was the 2013 winner. The 2014 winner was Dom Samuel. Last year's winner, Jonathan Bond. So we've kind of sort of maybe got Dom Samuel right 2 years later.
We're just ahead of our time, that's the thing. Next year is going to be Jonathan Bond.
The more hilarious was the people nominated last year, which included Jonathan Bond, as mentioned, Rowan Libbard, Tariq Fosu, Aaron Cole, Paolo Hurtado, and Jake Cooper. This time around, Bucks has gone for Tyler Blackett, Ollie says Liam Kelly, Will's gone to Nye Watson, Steve's gone Yaku Mate, as has Johnny. Personally, I'm going for Yaku Mate as well.
I'm going to go for Yaku Mate, but I feel bad for ruining his career as a result.
Very true. Dave, anyone else for you?
Tenai Watson,
okay. Well, Tenai Watson...
Very, very, very closely followed by Liam Kelly, it's got to be said. So,
yeah, and both of those were the winners, but I just really fancy Yaku as having that little spark that's going to make him a superstar, whereas I think Watson and Kelly are going to be good players. I think Mate has something about him that could make him a great player. So, yeah, as Mark said, we apologise for ruining your career, Yaku. But you know, you will live on in Tyler Sim Podcast Award history. Anyway, that does wrap up the awards. Thank you to our panelists who couldn't be here. Let us know what you think about them. Send in your thoughts. And if you want to put together your own ballot, send it to the tylerstend@gmail.com. We'll have a full article up recapping the winners in the next few days. In the meantime, speaking of you and your contributions to the website, let's do a very quick mailbag.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
So a big thank you to everyone who has got in touch by all the usual methods at the Tylehurst End on Twitter, thetylehurstend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetylehurstend. We'll start with one that just didn't make it into last week's show as it came on just as we started recording. It was an email from Jack Killick, who says, guys, first of all, I like to say I'm really enjoying all the content at the moment. Thank you very much, Jack. So the point I would like to make is on Saturday, referring to the win over Sheffield Wednesday, a lot of people left early. Then the atmosphere just seemed to die. I can understand when at 2-0 everyone thinks we've won the game. However, after a goal through Fletcher and then a scramble in the box, it could have easily been 2-2. Really annoying me fans didn't stay to support the team to the final whistle, just to avoid a bit of traffic. What are your thoughts? We touched on this a little bit with Westy last week, but gents, just very quickly, your opinion on fans being early? Fans leaving early? Being early is not bad.
It's a bit of an endemic problem for Reading, isn't it? Ever since I've been going to the Medeski, we've always had that kind of 5-minute pre-final whistle rush, haven't we?
One of those things with an out-of-town ground.
So
people want to get to the front of the queue of the buses, or they want to get to the front of the queue of the car park. It's just one of those things that we've just got to suck it up.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
And as I said, I agree with everything you said, Jack. It'd be nice if people stayed to the final whistle and supported it. But at the end of the day, they've paid their money. They might have other commitments. And if they want to get out, at the end of the day, they might miss something good and it's their fault.
Quite.
So anyway, thank you very much for the email. Moving on to the tweet. Dan says, are we actually missing John Swift?
Yes, I think. Certainly Leeds game. Would be the one game in case in point where I think that John Swift is capable of creating something or scoring out of nothing. We struggled to break down, and he has that creative eye.
Yeah, very much agree, Mark.
Yeah, I think it is those moments when you don't expect anything to happen that he then pulls something out of the bag, such as Barnsley away and whatnot that he has.
Yeah, his set pieces as well are missed. He is missed, and Johnny especially misses him, so come back soon, John. He is just a couple of weeks away from fitness again. We had a bit of a fitness update on the last podcast extra on Friday, giving sort of details on him and Quinn and other players, so go back and listen to that for a full update. Matt says, Tanner and Fosu are out of contract in the summer, but are low down the pecking order. Is there any future for them here? Tanner looks our most promising youngster out on loan, but do you think he'll get a new contract in the summer? So two-part question. Well, basically, do you see either of them signing new deals, and would you give them new deals?
Depends how they progress at their present clubs. The problem we've got is that clearly Stam took a look at them and didn't feel that they necessarily fitted into the style of play or necessarily improved as throughout the pre-season. So I can't see, you know, there's a reason why they went out on loan. It depends on how they improve throughout that period that they're away.
I'm very worried, Mark, by the fact that Tariq Fosu can't get into the Colchester side. Said this last week with Westy, but the more he doesn't get game time out on loan for a fairly poor League Two side. I'm sorry, any Colchester fans listening, but you would think if he has that sort of talent level we all thought he had, and well, it's not a thought, we saw what he could do against Derby. Why isn't he playing?
Well, that's the worry, isn't it? And if you go back through Reading Academy history, the players that went on loan and did well were Gylfi Sigurdsson, Hal Robson-Kanu, Jem Karachan and Alex Pearce, all spring to mind quite quickly. And
Michael Hector was another one.
Exactly, and he's gone to League Two. And as you say, that's not the hardest league in the world. It's not necessarily attuned to a player's style sometimes. I think they got discussed last week quite a lot, but I can't imagine it being a good sign that he's not in the team, that's for sure.
Dave, would you, at this moment in time, if you had to, give him a new contract or not, do you give it to either of them?
Looking at it through Stam's eyes, I wouldn't give one to Fosu, because he clearly sees that Fosu wasn't good enough at the start of the season, and he's not getting game time now, as Will pointed out. He's not, and yourself, he's not getting game time in League Two. Craig Tanner, at least, is getting game time, and he's actually really well respected.
Scored at the weekend.
Scored at the weekend, the only goal of the game against Accrington, I believe. He is. So I'd be inclined to offer him another contract, And see what occurs.
Yeah, Fosu not having played now since the 22nd of November. It's just all of the signs are just wrong. I think that it's a little bit like Dom Samuel for me in that there we are seeing now why Dom Samuel didn't play for so many years. Credit to Dom Samuel, who has come through it and now seems to be making an impact. But Tariq Fosu is being overlooked now by successive managers, and that doesn't bode well. Hopefully, it's just a case that Stam just doesn't see him as his first option and wants him to get game time and he'll come back. But yeah, very worrying for me. And Tanner, I liked Tanner when he was coming through, but I do just worry that maybe he's found his level.
I don't think he'll fit into the system because he's not quite a striker. Certainly not a lone striker, given he's a bit diminutive. He's not central midfielder.
He's kind of a winger. He's kind of one of those wide forwards, isn't he?
Or he's not blessed 10. With outrageous pace, is he?
Trickery is his sort of skill, isn't it? Bit of a bit Beeren's light, isn't he, I suppose?
I mean, if I was to cry...
him, to be honest with you, to be absolutely truthful. The only what I've seen of him has been on TV when Plymouth have been on TV.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll give Tanner a new contract, then sell him to a promoted Plymouth side and say, if you're good at Plymouth, we'll buy you back for £2.5 million.
Yeah, I think you have to put an offer on the table, I think, for them, a decent one, but I think Reading would still be entitled to compensation as long as they offer a deal. So I think you offer them a deal, even if you know they're not going to sign it, because you want to get that compensation. So, but they've both got big things to prove. If they have a good second half of the season, anything can change. So we'll see. Just look at Liam Kelly, who probably thought his Reading career was over in the summer, and now finds himself starting Championship games away at Elland Road and Ewood Park. Jack Simmons, who out of the starting 12 or 13 players would you expect to see around a Premier League team if we were to be promoted?
John Swift, Liam Moore.
Yeah.
Chris Gunter.
Alio Habsi would get around a Premier League team, but it'd probably be number two.
Yeah. McCleary, maybe?
McCleary would probably get into...
in and amongst.
At this form, he would, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not Vandenberg, not Williams.
Evans
not
probably isn't there quite yet.
McShane would be just about there, but we'd have to sign at least one centre-back.
Gunter could do a job for a Premier League side. So there we go. We've rattled off five or six players straight away. So there you go. Nice quick answer to that question.
There we go. Yeah, We're halfway to survival.
Indeed. Ollie, what was your goal of 2016? Could be a new award or just a discussion point. And happy Christmas, everyone. Thank you, Ollie. Goal of the year? Other than Hal Robson Canoes for Wales.
Oh, blimey.
Danny Williams got a nice one against Blackburn in the...
That was 2015.
It was at the very end of last
December
year.
December 2015.
Oh, yeah. That's the worst one.
Goal of the... Oh, Christ.
The one on
Ollie Norwoods v Forest. John Swiss v Barnsley.
Yeah.
Swiss all long ranges. Nice. Everybody likes a long ranger.
Evans' win against Blackburn was a nice team move from the throw-in all the way to the finish. That was a good goal.
I was going to say Nick Blackburn's goal at Hull, but unfortunately that was late last year.
Lucas Pearson's against West Brom.
There was a really.
I did like that.
There was Roy Beeren's goal against
the lucky deflection.
No,
Bristol City.
Sorry,
Bristol
City goal. I used the word luck there.
Don't start that. Don't start that one. Yeah, against Bristol City, a fantastic move.
Yeah,
and a cracky finish. So that
we
wins
we
it
have
me.
Had some decent ones that just don't occur very often.
I just don't remember goals.
Ola John stuck a few away as well. Consolation at Huddersfield. Yeah, it was. Won the game.
Okay, well, as
my third minute.
My vote goes to Beeren's, but we're not doing this in an award, actually, Ollie. We've already done awards. You've had your turn.
I wasn't there for Beeren's goal, so I can't comment.
Okay, anyway. And that wraps it up on that low-key. Now I can see Davey still racking his brain, trying to figure one out.
Yeah,
in the end credits, we'll have the last shout-out.
Yeah, we'll have one of those record-scratching moments, and Dave will come back on. But anyway, thank you very much to everyone who has contributed emails. Please keep them coming. As mentioned, we are taking a couple of weeks off, but that doesn't mean you can't send in your thoughts, your reflections, your questions, your pub chat suggestions, all the usual places, thetilelessend@gmail.com, facebook.com/thetilelessend, and @thetilelessend on Twitter, preferably using the hashtag TTE podcast. Also, just a very big thank you to everyone who continues to contribute to the Patreon campaign, our crowdfunding scheme at patreon.com/thetilelessend. That's Patreon, patreon.com/thetilelessend. It really does touch the heart at this time of year to know that people are still giving over their hard-earned cash to help support this site even when you've got Christmas presents and things to buy. So if you have got a spare couple of quid, you were going to buy something in the sale, but you thought, you know what? I will fund this podcast. I want that microphone to sound even better, or I want to see different levels of analysis and things like that that we have to pay subscriptions for. So yeah, your money does go to good places. So thank you very much indeed. But anyway, we will finish this final show of the year with just a general look ahead of the festive fixtures in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So we're going to stray from our usual format of profiling in depth the opposition we've got over the next few weeks, simply because there's a fair few games to cover in the time we're going to be off. We're probably going to come back just after the Bristol City game, but it might get pushed back until after the United game, depending on availability and when people are around and things like that. So stay tuned to the Twitter. So I'll profile the full four games a bit closer to them on the website. So the tarlhurstend.com won't be going anywhere. So if you want full sort of previews of those games, do head online for that. But in the meantime, chaps, four games in question. Norwich at home on Boxing Day, then it's Fulham at home, a trip to Bristol City to start 2017, and then that ill-fated trip to Manchester, that expensive trip to Manchester United for the FA Cup. So from those three games in the league, we started at the top of the show by asking, were you happy with 3 points from six this week? How many points would you be happy with from those three games, Mark?
Take six, I'd say. I might even take four, depending on how the performances pan out. You've got to be winning one of Norwich and or Fulham. Bristol aren't in the best form, so going there, it depends. If we play a good game, it's certainly a game we can win, and we do very well at Bristol historically. And then the Man United game, we will lose.
Dave?
Yeah, pretty much that. I'd be more than pleased with six points. Two wins from those three games would be a real statement of intent. And I know I keep saying it throughout the season, but you know, Norwich, they're no mugs. They, you know, they've got some really good quality in their side. Fulham, as we found out 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and Bristol City are more than that. I think they're in a slightly false position, if I may use that horrible cliche. They're in the bottom.
Too low or too high?
Too low. I think they're certainly a side that should be pushing for the playoffs. I'd be more than happy with 6 points. I'd take four.
I would, funnily enough, I would rather have five than six, because I'd rather be unbeaten in those three games than take two wins and get a defeat in there, especially at home. I don't think you want to lose either of those two games. Psychologically, they're playoff rivals. And I think this is the stage where you need to be powering on and going, we can actually compete with the very best teams in this division. I know both teams have had wobbles and aren't the most consistent. They're two very strong teams. I would almost rather, I said, get 5 points, you know, get 4 points at home and then a point at Bristol, than saying winning at Bristol and losing at home to Norwich, if that makes sense.
I think that's fair. You know, if we're going to go, you know, down the line of not being happy with a defeat, which is obviously absolutely fair, then I'd be happy with 3 points.
Yeah, three draws. And then the United Cup game. Mark, you've gone for defeat.
Yeah, we'll lose that.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately going to have to go for a three. It's a three no's for me. We're not through to the next round. No. Prediction League to end us off as we head into the new year. Dave, you're second. You are a point behind Johnny Williams, mostly thanks to your correct prediction of a Leeds 2-0 win. Well done.
Thank you.
I think you were on a run of three correct scores in four games.
I was, and very, very close to getting the correct result on Saturday.
You were.
It wasn't for George Evans.
Well, Johnny, who leads the table by a point from you on 23 points, he was seconds away. He had two.
That makes me feel better.
So there you go. So he's on top on 23. Dave, you're on 22. Charles is on 20. And me and Westy prop up the table on 17. We're not actually going to enter our Prediction League scorings for this week, unless you particularly want to do Norwich.
I was literally thinking 2-0.
You were thinking Reading win?
2-0 home win.
2-0 home win. Yeah. And I will go for a scrambled 1-0 home win. So we're going to be positive. Mark, do you want to make an honorary prediction?
I'd probably say 1-1.
Okay, I like it. Right, that is it. That is it for 2016 from this podcast. I can't, again, I said it when I was talking about the Patreon campaign, thank you to everyone who's given their support, whether you've listened to the show, whether you've clicked on something on the website, whether you've given us your money on Patreon, or, you know, sent us an email. Even the people that filled in the survey the other week, it's been incredibly helpful. And their ideas I'll be taking on board and looking at in detail over this Christmas break to help try and make the show even better in 2017. It's by the fans for the fans. If we don't hear from you and you don't sort of tell us what you like, what you don't like, we can't make it any better. So it, you know, we want to make the best possible show for you guys out there. It's the only reason we do it. You know, as much as it's nice us gathering around here, sitting and talking for an hour or so on Reading each week, you know, there are probably some weeks where I'm probably not speaking alone. I'll probably go, do you know what? Probably going to give this week a miss. But it's only because we know from your emails and your tweets that you look forward to the show and that you like it, that, you know, we go the extra mile, we do our best to schedule shows wherever we can, and I genuinely feel bad whenever I have to cancel one. So thank you for all your support. We'll be back in 2017, but while we're taking a break, as mentioned, the show's not completely going on hiatus because there is a two-part interview with Jem Karachan coming up. That will be released probably on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, maybe a day or so either way, depending on where I am and what access I have to the computer. So, but stay tuned, loads of great topics covered in that, from, you know, obviously the big injuries, what he thought of different managers like Brendan and Brian McDermott and people like that. So just stay tuned. I promise you it is well worth your time. So 2 hours, it's split over two shows, and I can only encourage you to keep an ear out for that. And also, going to announce here that we are in talks for one of the biggest guests we will ever have on this podcast. The man, the myth, the legend, DJ Mega Party. It is in the works. Now, it's not 100% confirmed. There are still delicate negotiations to be made, but we're talking to his representatives, and hopefully, just at the turn of the year, we will be sitting down and talking to him to give him his chance to have his say on his start that I think everyone will admit didn't go so well. But what he's done since then, how he's took that criticism and critique on board and how he's done. So genuinely, for me, that's going to be an interesting one, Dave, because I'm actually quite looking forward to hearing what he's got to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I'm quite looking forward to it, purely on the basis that it'd be good to get his feedback on how he's been perceived. If he's willing to portray that, of course, and also it'll go some way to, I think, building some kind of bridge between some of those fans who are still not 100% taking to him.
Absolutely. Well, fingers crossed that gets done. As I said, there are, in all seriousness, there are, you know, a couple of things, and obviously these things can be rescheduled and things like that. But fingers crossed, we're going to get a chance to have a chat with him, and when that is 100% fully confirmed, I will be inviting your questions as well. So stay tuned to the Twitter for that. But gents, any final messages of 2016? What do you think we'll be talking about this time next year? Will we be talking about a Premier League club?
Premier League relegation battle, maybe.
Okay, optimistic. Mark?
I can foresee us talking about a team that is in exactly the same position as it is now.
Okay.
But a much more rounded side. I think realistically, yeah, we'll be looking. We're not going to get promoted this season. But yeah, I think we'll a much better side in terms of...
I think I very much agree with that. But hopefully there'll be some fun along the way. As I said, thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for that Gem interview. And as always, well, first of all, have a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, and of course, come on, you Arse.